So I'll call the meeting to order, and I would like to start by acknowledging with much gratitude that we are meeting today on the traditional and unceded lands of the Coast Salish people, and in particular the Qualicum First Nation. So I'm hoping that we can adopt the agenda with an amendment, and that would be to bring 6A, the new business presentation from the RDN, up to the first item of business after the adoption of the agenda. So can I have a mover to that?
I will make that motion.
Thank you, Peter. And a seconder? Great. Diane? And all those in favor? Lindy, maybe you can use your it's not even your hand?
Oh, yeah.
Her hand, maybe, or something? Or
I'm unmuted, and I'm looking for a hand. There we go.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so it was carried unanimously. Okay, so we'll turn it over to our RDN guest.
Before you go on there, the agenda has passed?
Yes.
Can we add this to the agenda later on?
Sure. Under new business, when we do that.
Yeah.
Or under the round table.
Yep.
Either one?
Okay,
perfect.
Can you see the screen?
I sure can.
So some of our members are new, and some of them you recognize have been around for a while, but I'm new to this committee.
No, so I call it a learning experience.
So, great.
I'll just, maybe I'll do a quick intro, and then Dean will grab the wheel, and I'll grab the latter part of the wheel and so forth. So thank you for having us join you here today. It's always great to go face-to-face again with the various communities that we work within, and Qualicum Beach being a major one of those, as we all well know in this room type of thing. My name is Tom Osborne. I'm the general manager of the RDN Recreation and Parks Department. Know many of the faces over time. I've been with the regional district, 22 years, this kind of thing. So it's been a really good job, a good career, and a great community to work within. And I'm joined by Dean Bamman. Dean's our manager of recreation services, and he oversees the recreation services portfolios throughout the region. And we'll dive in into the slides on what does that mean. So Dean will provide an overview of the rec services in the area, specifically to the Oceanside area, but also we'll touch on some of the other areas that we work within, just for context. Because we work in so many different communities, and we have different hats, and we work on Gabriola, and I look a lot different on Gabriola than I do here today, and so forth kind of thing. So then the latter part of the presentation, we'll talk about parks as well, too, and there is a park side of Brecon Parks, and I'll run through those slides. We do have a manager of parks counterpart to Dean, but I know the portfolio pretty well, so I can certainly run through those as well, too, and pretty open-ended kind of presentation, and we'll open there. So if any questions that come along, and just catch on those, that'd be great.
Yeah. All right, thanks, everybody. So I put my timer on just so I can be conscious of time, so if you see me checking, I'm not checking messages or looking for something else to do. It's just I find putting my timer on helps me focus. So as Paul mentioned, wanted to cover recreation and parks today. We've got some slides. We can stop at any time and answer questions. As Tom mentioned, the parks piece is a little bit late, so if you have any parks questions, it might just be, but I'll look to the chair to sort of direct that. It might be more prudent just to wait on any of the parks questions that come up. But again, chair will take direction from yourself. So this is just obviously our first, Bernadette, it's not working. Thank you. So this is basically some columns of what we actually do, and again, slides a little later, we'll get down into that. So community engagement, public relations, active living, recreation operations. So again, it's just not recreation operations, things that you can drive by and open doors and go into. It's a lot of the agreements and different things that we're doing up within the community that you might attend an event, or you might go to an event, or somebody that you know has attended. That we're a partnership, but it's out in the community, and it's maybe not as easy to see as a pool or arena and such. So, and of course, we do operation and maintenance of RDN facilities. So our big facilities are obviously in this area anyway, the pool and the arena. We do have another one, Meadowood Community Hall, Little Dashwood Hall, some other smaller community halls in some of the parks and stuff. So we can talk about those as well. Community partnerships. I have a little bit more on recreation programming. Today's what I just handed out is what our most recent active living guide is, and I'll kind of share with you just sort of what's going on today as far as programming. It's obviously summer, so we've got a number of summer camps running, so I'll share some of that with you. As Tom mentioned, this is sort of who we are. So my side is, as you can see, Tom at the top and some of our staff. And then my side is to the right there. So again, we are broken down. So the Oceanside area pretty much is the three main areas: aquatic services, arena services, and then recreation program services. So that's kind of the way we manage, the way we budget, the way we deliver our programs. We break those off into three different categories. Some of our programs, like our financial assistance, our inclusion programs, some of those are universal and go across all. So they're not, they might be steward under one, under net recreation program services, but they're applicable to the different areas as well. So some of those reds sort of are big positions. I could update this every single day and it'll always change. So we have a couple of those more filled already, but I'll get into a little bit more, not too much depth, but I'll touch on and pause that when we get to aquatics, because we are facing some challenges as far as just retaining staff for that area. Refrigeration operators, which is again for the arena, so I'll spend a little bit of time on that. So that's kind of the area and an overview, and then again, Tom will speak to the left side that's shaded out there. So this is, again, this is just a bit of a profile of who we are and what we do. So 60 staff, full-time, part-time staff, casuals. That doesn't include, we've got about 30 staff working now in the summer. We just hired for the summer program, so that's 60 dozen. So today we've got about 90. As you both see, you know, 365 days, the pool runs. You don't shut things off on the weekends or at night, so the pool and the arena is constantly run. So there's certain regulations and requirements, obviously, that specifically to the arena, that we have to have somebody there 7 days a week, 365. And then our shifts are all kind of all over a typical kind of outside of the Monday to Friday typical time. So we're pretty unique, I think, but we're not so unique that it's unheard of. We've got such a large spectrum as far as our staff. We've got some that are working today are grade 10. This is their very first job, very first interview that they've gone through with us. And then we're on the opposite end where we've got some that are retiring in the next few months, have grandkids that are older than the kids that now they're working side by side in the, so it is a really unique environment, and we recognize that, and we enjoy that. So again, so this is a lot of it's the first real job, and like some of the other work areas as well, elder care responsibilities, child care responsibilities. So again, we're faced with those just like any other employer would be. And then the whole certifications and training. So no disrespect to anybody in the room, but some of us aren't qualified to work for the department just because of the refrigeration certifications, lifeguarding, life savings. So, and that's just the nature of the job. So there is quite a high certification in some of our areas. So what I got down there is just some of the common themes, and this is perhaps at the commission level that you would be interested in. So we've always seen a connection between recreation and healthy communities. You've heard the upstream and downstream of healthcare. So we've always seen ourselves as the upstream. You know, the more that you can do preventative health and fitness, the less impact it should have on emergency services and hospitals and primary care facilities. So that seems to be continuing to be a topic of importance, especially through COVID, when a lot, you know, the pool is one of the safest indoor places to be, and a lot of our park space was highly recommended as far as continuing activity, physical activity. So, and again, we when we talk to the RDM board or our Oceanside Services Committee, we try to focus in on and let them understand that they do have influence over the budget. They do have influences over the different programs and services that we have, and we'd like to remind them, because sometimes I think they don't realize that there is a mechanism that helps us change. So, you know, if you want to change the criteria to a recreation grant program, that is possible. The elected officials have a way of doing this. And then again, this is what I got. The next few slides is just related to Oceanside Services for the arena, and then the something similar format for the pool, and then finish off with the recreation program piece. So those of you that are anyway somewhat familiar with the Oceanside Place, it's a twin sheet located in Parksville. The debt on that building is retiring this year, so it's going to be paid off. We're actually, just because it's been that long and it's 2023 and it was built in 2003, we are planning a somewhat of a retro birthday party, I guess, for lack of a better word, probably in the fall. So, again, this is just some of the typical facilities and typical amenities that we would have in a marine environment. So, again, what we've got here is sort of breaking it down. We have a dry floor season and an ice season. So, as you can, as right now we've got, we just put the ice back in. We've probably got about 4 different camps, hockey camps running right now. So it's just at the time of the year. So we're finding our demand for ice in the summer is almost as much as our demand for ice in the fall and winter. So with the two sheets, we're able to accommodate that. Although it does seem to always sort of shorten our dry floor season. So we've got to be cognizant that lacrosse still needs to get in there and some of the dry floor events that happen. We still want to make sure we have the room for that. So this is just pickleball tournament happened in May, so we can get 9 pickleball courts on the arena. We've been doing it for years. I think we were probably one of the first ones when we first did it. We spent about $6,500 on pickleball equipment, and then the people at the time thought we were crazy because it was a fad. Well, we paid off our pickleball equipment in 1 year. So we have a large tournament every year. It's indoor. 2 full days. There's about 80 individuals that register for the mixed and then the men's and ladies. So that's a big event that happens in the arena. That happened in May this year.
Is it mostly locals or the people
come over? No, they come over pretty much. When I go down and look, I recognize and talk to a lot of people from Port Alberni and sort of kind of
all around.
Yeah. Yeah. So, again, just for this, this is what obviously hockey is, you know, no, it's not unique to have a hockey in the arena, but what this one is a little bit is, it's a tryout program, so 55 and over. So traditionally you think of hockey, if you don't start when you're 6 or 7, you're pretty much done. But a lot of people, that's not the case. So what we do is we offer a tryout program, you know, low competition. If you don't have equipment, we have equipment. So we're really just trying to focus in on, just because you didn't start when you're 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, if you want to start when you're 55 and you basically know how to skate, we've got a program for you. You can't really read it here, but this is a grant program that we've got through the BC Senior Games and BCRPA, so there is grants out there that we're constantly looking for. Special events, we've got quite a few of those. I've got another slide on that. That's just one example. So, and then this one is during the Winter Wonderland, which is our big Christmas holiday season time one. Part of our youth strategic plan is to still have free and specific events where not only the youth are invited to come to, but they also participate in sort of the content of that event. So this one, we have what's called a YSR, or Youth Services Advisory, YRA. So that's a program that we offer through, with the introduction with the youth here. They meet once a month from October to May, and they come up with different program ideas and help us program. As far as them, they get credit for school and responsibilities and skill sets that they can use on a resume and such. So,
and you run that program?
Oh, we run that program.
Okay, so you have RDN staff that facilitate and manage it?
Yeah. Again, just another arena dry floor, and this one you might see. That top one is a quilt show, large. So every few years we get large events. This quilt show happened, it was 2018, and we probably booked the facility for them in about 2015 or 20. It's a huge event. So obviously, if there's a large event like that, they have to bid on it, right? They have to put a bid in. Same as for an athletic event. If the lacrosse is hosting a BC, they need to know well in advance that they've got it. So we work with these groups 3 years in advance in a lot of cases, because we also realize this is their only one shot, so they can't be worried about the day of, is there power, you know, is there enough toilets? That's our job. So we make sure that we let them handle what they need to handle, but it's our responsibility to run the building and meet the needs of them. So the bottom one is a huge, it was a provincial Taekwondo championship that was held in the arena quite a while ago, a few years ago anyway. So yeah, this is typically, I think this was the Bolinas grad ceremony. So not this year, a few years ago. And then these are just some of the typical user groups for the arena. Oceanside Minor Hockey, Oceanside Minor Lacrosse, Parksville Panthers, Parksville Golden Oldies, Oceanside Generals, Qualico School District, ORHL, and Parksville Bald Eagles. Probably worth mentioning, but probably not something that nobody would realize. Well, even though a lot of the arenas in Parksville and a lot of these groups are called Parksville something, their members are from all over the areas. This is just, I won't spend just in the interest of time, this is just, we obviously, for the arena, most of the revenue and the generation is from private renters, so it's different from the pool. Pool is mostly admissions rolling in through the door, but most of the sort of the revenue or the activity in the arena is from admissions of what we, programs that we run, or also hours of use that we rent out. So we watch those numbers just to sort of see highs and lows. Obviously, 2020 was quite low just because of COVID. So, so Ravensong Aquatic Center. So, owned and operated by the RDN. Most of you probably do know that it's actually located in leased property from the town of Qualicum Beach. Just recently, that lease was recently
2 years ago, Tom?
Yeah, 2 years ago. 2 years ago, yeah. So, just renewed, so now it's good till 2034. Opened in 1995, and their debt for this building was retired in 2015. And then there, most of you are probably, but, you know, six-lane pool, a leisure pool, steam room, infrared, whirlpool, universal change rooms. I've got a little bit more slides just on sort of where we are as far as the Ravensong is right now. And as I mentioned earlier, the programs at the arena are mostly admissions or registered swim lessons, Aquafit, different register programs that we bring in. There is some private rentals, which I'll show you kind of some of the typical groups that there are. But that's pretty much what the arena is. The bottom picture is Aquafit. So during, it was at 65, we bumped it up to 80. And it's the balance between meeting the demand, but then if you put too many in, their experience diminishes because now they're, you know, they're side by side in the pool and maybe it's not as comfortable. The pinch point is really the change rooms. So when they all leave, our change rooms aren't designed to run 65 to 80 people through in less than 15 minutes. So that's kind of the pinch point. But we try to balance, listening to the feedback of the individuals that get in. Obviously, they would like less because they've got a more enjoyable experience, but it doesn't really meet the needs of the community if you're limiting it to such a point that not everybody can get in. I thought it was just two staff training, so that isn't actually an emergency response. Wyatt is our team leader in the blue, and they're just doing some training. Matt's our other team leader on the pool deck there, so that's a training session. Some of the special events, Ocean Mall Swim, again, it was this year's August 20th, so that's obviously a big event in the town of Qualicum Beach. We work closely with the town of Qualicum Beach staff on that one, and we've had meetings with them, kind of a debrief meeting as we sort of end 1 year, and then we start off, and they've been meeting Heath Mahoney, our aquatic superintendent, already had a few meetings with one of the Qualicum staff is on schedule and on track. And then one we do in January 1st is a polar bear swim up down in Parksville. So again, we do the pool, but then we have aquatic services outside of the pool as well, because we realize that we're probably the best suited to do those types of things. We don't like guarded beaches, and we just don't have the capacity to do that. So we try to get out in the community as much as we can, but we focus on some special events rather than sort of day-to-day aquatic life-saving, lifeguarding on the beaches and stuff. And then these are just some of our Ravensong Water Dancers, which is our Synchro Club, Aquatic Ravensong Aquatic Club, and then Oceanside Special Olympics. So they're some of the regular users at the pool. Same idea, we watch admissions and some of our registrations. So, and then Ravensong Aquatic Center. So these are sort of the areas right now, and you might have some questions a bit later when Tom does his portion as well, and we both can answer any questions on that. So we are in this order here, if you're familiar with the Ravensong Bylaw 89 Amendment, I don't know if some of you are. I can answer questions later rather than, but in broad strokes, it's looking at electoral area E, which is the news, doesn't pay into the pool function. They don't get to vote on things specific to the pool, but and they don't pay into it. But as we've done usage surveys over the years, there is, you know, tangible evidence that they use it. So what the board is looking at now is considering how can we bring electoral area residents to the pool to participate on some sort of a formula, whether it's usage assessment or population. We've been quite busy with that direction from the board. So a lot of our time and effort's been going into that. We've got another meeting next Wednesday, that pool select committee. So a lot of work's been going into that. Again, that pool select committee is looking at different options to give to the board that might work and address sort of that, making sure that there's some contribution from areas that participating that aren't currently. So,
that's not unique to other areas that have that problem. I lived in Port Renfrew.
And
so, you know, there was that whole deal with Port Renfrew and the CRG and the but we were a lot further away than they knew. So.
And then the expansion. So we've done a lot of work on the expansion, and we've been budgeting that. We've got probably close to $7 million in reserves for that project. But we have put I'll double say, I think it's about 6.5 or something.
Yeah, that's good.
We have to just slightly push the pause button because it's obviously related to bylaw 899. What's recently developed is also, possibly Parksville's been looking at building a second pool. And I think they're considering coming to the RDN and asking the RDN perhaps to consider another pool in the southern end of this district. So of course, depending on what happens there, it probably doesn't make sense to go ahead with the expansion the way it is right now when you're also looking at another pool. So we want to make sure we sync those two projects up. So unfortunately, it's caused us to just pause the expansion ones. And staff recruitment and retention, I did mention that just about. It is a challenge to get the qualified in staff that want to do that. There's so many other opportunities right now out there in the work-life balance. And I remember when I was growing up, you know, your goal is to get a full-time job, and now that's not the goal so much anymore. It's a better, better life, work-life balance. So a lot of people are totally comfortable working part-time and not having to work 35 to 40 hours a week. So these are the last few slides that I'll sort of finish with. So we talked about the arena, we talked about aquatics, and then this is Northern Recreation, also known as Oceanside Services Program. So these are the ones that we go out, we do adult, you know, sort of anything that you see in the guide, and this is one of the three guides that we do. Everything from adult fitness, adult hikes, to chair yoga, to seated fitness, to first aid courses, preschool programs, any of our summer programs that are going on, any of our youth leadership programs that are going on, that all falls under this program. So anybody in the area is registered and comes to these camps and programs. What we do is we go through, again, we don't have a typical community center, so that works for our advantage because then we go out and we bring our show on the road, so to speak. And when we did our master plan, and that was completed in 2019, it goes from 2019 to 2029, that was one of the strengths of our department is you go out and you bring your act to town, so to speak, using our circus analogy. And what causes us to do is we have to basically find, we pay for all space, but we got to find basins of churches, we got to find, you know, anything that doesn't have a wall or a low ceiling so that we can deliver our programs in. So we use the civic center, we use community churches, we use small halls, we go inside, we go outside. So and those are just a list of some of the programs, some of the places that we actually hold some of our programs in. When it gets to obviously the bigger, just doesn't make sense of the economies of scale to have, you know, four pools and different arenas, you know, five arenas. So the larger infrastructure, obviously those are more centralized. And these are just some of the bigger events that we do here, youth events, Go Bike Week. We participate in Qualcomm Beach Family Day, those types of events that we do, we have staff and tables at and stuff. So, so some of our, just our key partnerships. So Town of Colton Beach, one of the ones I just mentioned is, of course, the partnership with the lease for the land that the pool sits on. SOS, most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with Society of Organized Services and Financial Assistance. So we try to tap in to make sure we know what everybody else is doing. We know we don't need to do everything. We don't have to be the end all be all. We like to know what other groups and organizations are doing so that we can leverage some of our resources, maybe work together on certain projects, or just know when they're going on so that we can focus another area that perhaps another organization isn't doing at the time, or perhaps different days of the week or something like that, just to make sure that we're not sort of, you know, stepping over each other. I don't know if many of you know about the Arrowsmith Community Recreation Association or Lighthouse Community Center. Well, I'll stop on those. And so, again, with that idea that, you know, remote access to recreation in some of those more remote areas is sometimes challenging to those groups. So what we do is we have supplemental recreation services agreements with an organization out in Lighthouse. They run their community center, but they also have some supplemental responsibilities to do recreation programming for that community. In that community, but anybody can go. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to show a membership card or residence card to come in. Arrowsmith is the same for that Littoral Area F, so Coombs, Hilliers, Arrington. So the funding for those come from Northern Recreation Community Services, which is funded from City Park, Hill, Town of Colga Beach, and all the electoral areas. So sometimes, even these organizations, sometimes they forget that it's paid by other people than not just your own area. So, and they're all volunteers, societies and organizations, but we do have to sort of gently remind them sometimes that, you know, it's just not, you have, it's the entire board and it's contributions from the city and the town that pay for these as well. So, and they're grateful for it. They just sometimes, they just don't sort of understand that. And again, I touched on some of this, again, some of the programs, we do programs for all ages. Financial assistance program. So what that is we offer it with in collaboration with the SOS. So we do certain age groups where it's basically we have a criteria. It's not a high criteria. You don't have to show T4s and bank statements or anything like that. But we do have some screening questions just to make sure what the intent is. And it works out to about 75 per individual, 250 a year for a small family, so that goes to any programs, recreation programs within the area. So it's handed over, and then we monitor and work with the group. We let them know what else is out there in case there are, you know, other free recreation opportunities. Interesting, when I tracked this one, I hadn't tracked it for a year or so, but I thought at first we would see just people on there perpetually just always, never able to sort of to get out of that, and it's interesting that a lot of these, maybe 2 or 3 years, and then the family, their circumstances change, and they've you know, been able to sort of not access that program anymore. So there's not a heavy perpetual number of people that are on it for a long time. Our inclusion is what we do during our programs. Right now we've got 5 inclusion workers working in summer camp, so they go around typically 2 ways to deliver adaptive recreation programs. So some of it if you find participants for a specific camp or program need additional support, you can either offer a specific standalone program for them that's modified for anybody that comes in. There's criteria to come in, or there's another way which is more of it's called inclusive, is you modify the program and then everybody comes in. So we do that. We do the latter one where we have inclusion workers that go. We keep the programs and we invite anybody that might even need some adaptive opt-ins into the existing program, and then we just provide inclusion support. And then as we mentioned, we do similar programs of Cedar. This is Cedar, so a lot of the same programs. That one on the bottom is a walking school bus. So that's just one of the, we do these up here as well. That's just the program leader meeting the school bus after and going and then walking the kids to a after school daycare. So we do these here as well, but that's just the program. And I wanted to end, again, this is just some of the program ones, is, again, we talked about the guides. I'm going to come back to this one if the time is all right, Chair. I've got about a minute video I want to see, but if it's not,
No, we're pretty.
Totally fine. Are we all right? Okay. Okay. So I'll come back to this one in a second. I'll just send out that one. So again, we've got a lot of agreements. I talk about supplemental recreation services, and then we have agreements for use of other things like Qualicum Commons. We rent space in there. So we've got different agreements out there. So we lease space, I think you're mostly familiar with, but perhaps you're not. So we're what we call the booking agent for sport fields for the city of Parksville, Town Hall, and each school district, and then the RDM. So we take that responsibility on. The rationale behind that years ago is so the youth soccer, the softball, or the football, they don't have to phone the city of Parksville to find space, and then they don't have to phone the town of Falcon Beach, and they don't have to phone the RDN to sort of try to mesh the three schedules. So what we do, we have agreements, with yourselves and with the city of Parksville and the school district, and we're the booking agent for that. So we have access to your, and we've got the okay from those three partners to book their facilities. They all tell us when they need to close, what sort of the terms and conditions are as far as their use, and then we book those out, and then we work closely with your maintenance, like again, when there's any closing or anything like that, and then with the user groups as well. So, what else do I have on? Yeah, I think that covers those there. And then on the right there, some of those you won't be. So again, I mentioned Cedar, South Wellington. We also have recreation services on Gabriel Island. So those are just some of the examples that we've got down there. And then that last one, Cedar, we're looking at converting a school from an elementary school in the South Wellington area. We've got a 25-year agreement with the school district down there. So we're reconstituting a school that's been shut, built in 1969, closed in 2013. So we're trying to reconstitute that and turning it into a community center and working with the local community organization on that.
I think it's worth adding, Dean. Regional districts are quite unique, different from a municipality. So a municipality, you collect the tax and the council figures out how it's supposed to be used every year. We have service areas, and they're very specific. So the arena has a service area, and that's our so-called the beach, EFTNH. The pool has a service area, same people minus the news right now. When Dean's talking about Area A and Area B, they actually have their own local service. So it's a tax collected by the area to use for the area. So sometimes it's a misnomer that, hey, the area is spending our money down in Cedar. That's not the case. It's actually collected and used in that area. I'll move into community parks and talk a little bit about that as well. What we call the sub-regional facility, they are shared, and you have access to use kind of thing on that front. So if you hear, hey, you're on Gabriola, that's paid for by Gabriola. Yes, my left foot is paid by Gabriola, my left leg is paid by the arena, and my upper torso is paid by, so we're spread around, but if you're a local provider, be it the lifeguard or whatever, it's 100%, you're funded 100% into that. So it's good to be aware of that, because it's really hard to understand regional district budgets. They are a la carte, I say, you pick a service and you pay for that service, as opposed to in a municipal setting, it's like use and shift kind of thing. So we cannot use money to build football into school and then apply it to the pool. It's solely for that area, so just sort of put that out there.
So again, I mentioned some of these already, and then as Tom mentioned, so when we talk about Gabriola or South Wellington, when you phone, you want to talk to the manager for recreation services for the regional district. Handles Gabriola, that's me. You want to phone and talk to the GM of who handles recreation and park services, that's Tom. Same thing for Cedar. So we are spread out. And we do and a lot of like we can really use some of the experiences that we've had in different areas and bring them in. Most in particular is like full supplemental recreation service agreement. We've probably got about five of them through our area, so we're quite familiar with them. So if somebody comes up and has an idea, we can show them what we're already doing, and they're, oh, that's great. This is exactly what we wanted. We've probably got four examples just because of just the way we ran them. So I just wanted to stop on the Recreation Services Master Plan and then show the video, and then I'd be all done here. So I made a bit of a reference to the 2029 Recreation Services Master Plan. So there's 34 recommendations that came out of that master plan, and it's just a coincidence. 17 came to just recommendations on program services delivery, like what to do, how to add. A lot of those are affirmations of what you're doing, continue to do. And then there's 17 specific to recreation infrastructure. Some of those are just, as I mentioned, you know, keep looking at the booking agreement, the rate agency, the booking agreements for that you're doing for the town and the school and the city. And then some of them, though, were for larger recreation infrastructure. Those are the ones where they do take some more planning. And we did meet years ago with city partial staff, town of Qualcomm staff. I think it was a different staff at the time. Luke, you might have been around at that time, and the school district staff. We looked at sort of some synergies for large recreation infrastructure, whether it's, as probably no surprise, there's no artificial field in this area. Probably isn't a surprise that we're one of the only ones, probably the province, that don't have one. So we were looking at those larger outdoor multi-sport complexes that we probably would need to, that RGN regional collaborative approach on. So it might be in some area where there's just suits because of the infrastructure commitment to it. Who's got property and where it could lay out. So we've been doing that, continuing what we've been doing mostly is just putting money aside, a little bit of money aside for those types of things. So the track that just recently got approval that the through the school district, money for the track from the RDN is coming from that. And Thomas says we can't use that $6-7 million that we've got in the pool and move it to the track. It's totally separate. So the money that we've got for a pool can be used for expansion. Can't do anything with the arena for that. So those are the types of recreation infrastructure that probably we need to remember that there's a collaborative approach that probably a commission such as this and staff and then RDS staff can remember and focus on as those come through, because they are big projects that need quite a commitment and coordination.
Does that plan get reviewed sometimes, or is it?
Yeah, so the review of the plan is there's specific to recreation infrastructure, there's a recommendation to review it about 4 to 5 years. I used the example the other day. In the plan, in the master plan, pickleball is mentioned twice, literally. There's only two words mentioned twice. Well, that's obviously changed from, so part of the recommendation in the master plan is every 4 to 5 years, revisit your recreation infrastructure priority. So you don't have to redo the entire master plan, but sort of look at trends and things that have changed. So that isn't a which is the scope of work and the other projects we've got on. We know we've got to get to it soon, and it might be as soon as next year, but it needs to be sooner rather than later, I guess.
Yeah. I think it's also budget time. So obviously you're trying to track out, you know, what's committed in an overarching plan to line up. We had COVID, which, so again, the plan 2018, COVID just kicked recreation. It was a hard profession that we needed during that period of time, kind of thing, where we laid off a good portion of our staff just to keep above water, and then to gain the trust of the population back in your facilities and so forth has taken time. They're coming back to, as we deem it, I thought, you know, post-pandemic levels kind of thing, and then some. But it was one of the few areas that the recreation sector across North America, and certainly in BC with the regulations here, it was a huge setback kind of thing. So everything that we could in 2018, well, who envisioned 2.5 years of pausing and rebuilding trust in your own profession and the field that we provide kind of thing. So we are set back by about 3 years.
Yeah,
I'd say if you look at it, because it was all hands on deck to adjust. I'm not going to use the key word.
So is there any, okay, this is just exciting just to hear all this stuff because it's reminiscent of the past and also really ambitious, not necessarily for the future. When there's a recreation services master plan or any planning process that's sort of that wide scope, is there integration and linkage with the different municipalities serve with their own planning processes like OCPs and others? Or are they done in silos?
They're done some in silos, but I know for my end, I could do a better job of putting my elbows up and saying, we're doing this and give us more information. I know Luke and I, we've talked before where we're talking about maybe about the pool expansion, and one of us will mention another plan, and then we'll look at each other like, hey, we should talk about that. So, and that's what I think is very important when we go out and we go to community meetings and we try to get out to as many of those as we can, because we pick up different things that are going on. But Colin or Luke might be able to speak more specifically to it. I don't think there's a specific catch, but.
So So we do develop a first reference for the master plan. We'll have a whole bunch of reference documents in everything from a regional growth strategy to active transportation plans, whatever it may be, and drill down to that area. There's multiple OCPs in even the northern half and even in the RGS too kind of thing. So lining up all these documents. Interesting enough, and I, the chair was in the meeting of the board strategic planning session and was talking about strategic planning and coordination of that, and they could always do better on that side. But just spent the morning on that topic, lose my voice to it, is trying to take that document and make it work, and to bring back to the board as well too. So it's always an area, because again, you have the electoral areas alone are many municipalities. They're really quite big and populated in a regional district setting, and then there's electoral areas on their borders of everyone kind of thing. So it is, but it's not. It can always be done better, for sure, and it's recognized as well. But the consulting firms get all the background document, how they utilize it, capture it, and carry on kind of things. So.
And then there used to be like a recreation services committee that kind of oversaw it, but now it's kind of been, my understanding, lumped into a bigger.
Yeah, so there was the REC Commission, known as the REC Commission, and it was made up of appointees and both of town councils, city council, and the RDN. It is now a select committee of the board, so it's basically all the players, if you will, that make the decision on the services being provided. There is other services that are pulled into that, emergency services. It's very localized to the north end as well, too, so they're at that table. And for a while, their economic development kind of bounces in and out of everyone's portfolios, depending on what's going on, that could be one as well. Primarily, the agenda is recreation-driven. I get to oversee it with the chair, so I kind of know. And then we'll feather in the emergency services northern portion when there's agreements to be brought through that committee and hearing on it. So still pretty focused.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to play this just about a minute, if that's okay, just to, I think it's going to work. Might not work. I think it's going to work. Associated view. We won't spend too much time. Maybe. There you go. Well done. Let me know if the volume's large. It's all right. So every year we do a meet the leaders. This is sort of what we put out so people can put faces to names to the different camps. So Camp Nemo is the one that has the swimming up here in Qualsham that has swimming lessons component. This isn't your park, actually, at the Civic Center. I'm here at the arena. We have a program that runs out of the arena. Little put that at, I think it's at the school district. Kyle Bungler is up here in Qualsham. I have no idea why we have a polar bear as a mascot.
Yeah.
Chris is probably the only one. They basically get in the van and go off and down the island. And then these are some of the other leaders that just weren't there that day. These are all our junior leaders, so these are grade 10s, 11s. And then we do have contracts with specific camps, not only sport, but bike camp, dance camp. So we do all this in-house.
Great.
Thanks for that.
Where
you get
the
That's not that.
Great.
Yeah, mine would go that way.
Another question here. I'm a pickleballer.
Yep.
So I'm part of your problem because I was the one that started this pickleball movement in Qualsham Beach in 2017.
Okay.
So anyhow, my question is this. We're starting a new group here because we've been, you know, our year engagement with us ended last April. And we've been playing in the curling rink for the last couple of months, but we're starting again in the Civic Center next month. So in the starter outdoor facility, which Aaron was all about, what would be under your chair? Would you administrate our thing, or would it be to us to ask you to do it, or can we do it ourselves?
Well, I think all three are options. I think it just depends on sort of the scope and magnitude of what you're hoping to do. I definitely see some, there's some, you know, some partnerships that could work at either getting the word out or technical advice or different things like that. But we've worked in all different kind of out of those three scenarios. We've done them all. So I think we'd be able to.
Is it kind of up to us to decide on how this?
To a certain point. If you wanted to come in and sort of, like if you wanted to come in and sort of, assume the responsibility of an RDN facility, that would be a request you'd have to make, and then we would probably look at what other use is going on. But yeah, I would say that's losing Tom picks up probably a request of some intention would be.
Yeah, the pickleball conversation is varied in what requests are. So there's the construction of pickleball courses is out there, and modification of course that falls to the jurisdiction. So it'd be a parcel call from or even the RDN. So pickleball, as you all know, is like treat pickleball players a little bit like herds, and they kind of migrate kind of thing. So you kind of, from a community, but you might migrate to another community. So it's almost getting to that really small level, but there's still a local social element to that right now that's in play. So for example, the RDN is built out of, I'll call it local dollars, so when I say then the news court for paid by the news dollars, there's of course in Dunsmuir paid by Electronary H or Bowser dollars as well, too, kind of thing. So, and so it really would, I'm not kind of used to field agreements that we have in place as well, too, so we can touch on it in the slide, but most of the fields are in the municipalities, so there's Jack Bagley in this area, maybe Lighthouse Field will come on stream eventually. And so we actually have agreements with the two municipalities to ensure that people who are using the fields, based on their surveys, are we're paying the operational cost of that. But the capital still falls to the jurisdiction that is within us. We're doing pretty well, so we don't run into a port ran through, or there's lots of really good bad examples out there of users and abusers is the other word that could be used at times kind of thing. So same with pickleball, it's kind of so hot and fast. That there's, everyone's trying to modify to meet the needs and so forth kind of thing. It's where we're finding in, I won't name the areas, about people want their own. And we don't want anyone else from that area as well. But we know that there's people coming in from other areas that you're from jurisdiction named pickleball. You probably got someone from that other area to make it work kind of thing. So Dean was mentioning, you know, on a program and awareness and recreation side. Absolutely. If you're looking for a modification of lines or build, that's up to the jurisdiction where we reside. I think if it ever gets to the booking need, we're not really there yet. You know, like we do for tennis and so forth, and sure, we are the booking agent for that. We'd have to work through that.
A secondary question for me is, Anne and her colleagues have our agreement with us to build a facility of about four courts, although we haven't got that kind of detail yet. Still waiting for our CEO to provide that with us. But anyhow, we have to raise $85,000. So is the RDN available for some kind of funding for a program on Harris?
For capital dollars, yes. I would say probably not. So that goes back to the jurisdiction that it's being resided in kind of thing. So it's going to be localized park service, if you will, and that's funded by each jurisdiction. So if you go to the news, Jack Bagley in the news, funded by Area E, the courts are swept by the volunteers, the nets are being provided by the local area, and so forth kind of thing. So I would say likely not. I say likely because I'm not a political entity. I advise on where things are.
Okay, yeah, John, for going to you, facility down there in the U.S., I hope they got some RDN funding for that.
From Area E.
From Area E.
Yeah, so there, we've received a nice grant of $500,000 from the federal government, and then we used community works funds that were appropriated for Area E, so it was solely for Area E. Yeah. So that wasn't drawn out from another pot from somewhere else. Yeah.
I'm just going to throw another way here. The LIT program, Leaders in Training, they helped us on the weekend with Beach Day. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
I thank you for putting that together, or whatever role you've had in that. But I thought they were great.
Yeah, I'll pass that on. I got involved with it, and I give some influence to it. And I'll definitely pass it on because that's what it's supposed to do. It's a bit of a different program because they pay to register for the program. So it's almost like, okay, but they get a lot of skill. Like a lot of what you see is the end result of them with hours and hours of our staff working on leadership skills and team building and icebreakers and different things like that. Excuse me. So that's exactly what we want them out and about to. So I will pass that on. Thanks.
No, they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Lindsay has her hand up.
Do
you have a question?
Hi. Yeah, sorry, I was just getting off mute there. I thought I would piggyback on the funding question about pickleball courts and apply that same to my question about the skate park. There's a feasibility study going on right now for that. So I'm just wondering your response on funding for the pickleball courts. I suspect it's similar for funding for a skate park or for the upgrade existing skate park.
Yeah, that'd be exactly the same. So we actually, not in this area here, but I don't have a good slideshow later, but we actually have constructed skateboard parks in Cedar, funded by Cedar. If you want to check out a really good, cool skate park on Gabriola, it is like world class, funded by Gabriola for that. Slightly different sport, but in the same culture, if you will. We just constructed a bike jump park in Bowser in the Lighthouse Park, if you ever want to see it. It rivals. Yeah, that's funny from the Metro Area 8. So again, it goes down to that capital infrastructure for these, I'll call them localized amenities, though we recognize their people move around to the best places. So again, the skateboard park is in that. It's more the regional type facilities that he was talking about, the arenas, the pools, and so forth, that goes in for. But, yeah, it gets a little bit more localized in this area here, so sorry for the answer on that one.
Were you able to leverage any other, like, grants or funding in those two situations?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the Gabriel Escape Park, I'm losing track of dollars, but they're really expensive. So
yeah.
There was a rural communities grant at the time for populations under 3,000 or something like that. We capitalized on that. Same as Cedar, about a third of that was paid for by a grant going in. And yeah, that's to do it. That's how you have to do it. Yeah.
Rob, you had a question?
I have two. One is just a thought. So pre-admission, I really appreciate the inclusion sort of topics, and there's some great examples, I think, in our area. The children under 3 and under for free admission, I'm wondering why it isn't 5 and under.
Yeah, it could easily be 5 and under. We're redoing our fees and charges. It's coming. It's another one of the projects that got put to the back. So I think we just chose a number where we thought, it could be 3, 4, or 5, and we thought 3 is starting to be, the parents are probably more inclined to start taking them out, and it's their first touch words. We went to 5, we thought that's 2 years we'd almost kind of lose the experience.
Right. So, yeah, it links to the idea of supporting families and developing good, healthy routines and reducing some of those barriers.
Yeah.
So that was that thought. And that leads to a big, broader question. So, you know, you have such a spider web of connections up and down our region, right, and touching on these themes. So, and they're so vital. I think you talked about
what was it, upstream impacts to health and well-being communities, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a, you know, I'm the backer, so I kind of see it as the core of community. So who do you see, or how do you see a role to be the leader in driving those communities, that messaging in our communities? If it's not you, who would it be?
I almost think it's a shared driver's seat with, my own experience was, is I used to rely on Island Health to do it. I don't know if it's Island Health, but they've got such a broad, like just working with them, they've got such a broad mandate of other areas that I wasn't even aware of that they have to put their time and effort into. So then we thought, okay, we need to advocate more, so we need to step up. So I think as many as we can, and when we do make those connections, we sort of send it out. We try to make those connections and start with whoever we think. So Island Health, us, any like local organizations, elected officials, you know, commissions such as this. So.
Yeah, it really is. It comes down to advocacy and health awareness and health in general. I mean, it is the upstream kind of thing. So if you end up dealing with Island Health, it's a bit of a surprise that we played a role. Yeah, but that has changed. There's still a sector that's in crisis in general. I think I can say that. But when we are meeting with them, they're a bit surprised what we already do. And we are actually stepping up even in front of them a little bit around prescription for health,
mm-hmm.
Working with the local doctors and stuff, and telling them about the programs we do. And it could be interesting working with those type of provincial agencies, because money can fall out of the sky sometimes, maybe around March.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll then utilize that money, and that's where the first prescriptions came from. We actually held a bank account, if you will, and we can actually work it through and work it out kind of thing. So do a really good, our staff do a really good job of that. They're in the community kind of thing. And but it's just making those relationships together. You also have different health regions within. I know I'm speaking to the people already in the know kind of thing, but, you know, so we'll work with the normal family practitioners in the South here and then, you know, Society Family here kind of thing. So, but you may be speaking with someone from Port Alberni or wherever, and COVID was not great in this area because everyone was pinned into their rooms kind of thing. So just general awareness, even at a political or committee level, is talking about the importance of recreation and social well-being. We saw it, we lived it, we were probably the most missed and most desired sector simultaneously. So you went to the parks to socialize, but you felt it. We got the calls, why aren't you open? My hip is starting to hurt. I haven't been able to get to the pool for my arthritis or whatever it may be kind of thing. So it really is, it's not one stop for sure.
Mm-hmm. How do we approach about sort of programming ideas? Because, you know, we certainly have a keen interest in this particular community. And I have a background in working with families and preschool and youth services. And I would really like to have the ability to, you know, collaborate or be able to, you know, come to this committee and talk about some ideas that we have. But then what do we do from there? Because this is a collaborative process. So how do we go about that?
Yeah, through us, I guess, through my side of the department. So we had a general interest. Or specific, and this is what we would do with somebody who knew that the community moves in and they've taught yoga, perhaps, and they're just, I want to know about yoga. So they'll phone our either the pool or the arena, they'll get in touch with a coordinator or one of the superintendents, and they'll have a meeting and they'll talk, okay, what, do you want to teach something or what do you think is missing? And it'll be a real collaborative approach, and it'll be information sharing. So if, yeah, so it would be either start with me, if you wanted pre, then we would end up getting you to getting the one of our program coordinators for whatever sort of area you're looking for to give you a call, find out what you're thinking, what you're doing, or what, and then sort of going from there. So,
how popular is your picnic pack rental?
It's
people know about it.
People know about it, and it's one of those ones where people find out about it. Like, oh, this is a great idea. And again, we just sometimes we do so much, we have to pick and say, okay, we have to focus on this. So it is a good idea. It is used, but there's not a huge waiting list for it, I guess. So, but we do need to sort of get it out. We use it ourselves too. We bring it out, and try to use it. So it is quite popular and appreciative. But it's not overly subscribed where we need to buy, you know, five more packs.
Maybe at community event having somebody there engaging with it and let people know that it's, you know, available for
Yeah, we started to do that in Cedar, where we go to the Cedar Farmers Market, and then the LAPs or the Corn Recreation Coordinator, he or she will set it up, and then they'll put a sounding board to show that what it is and what it's in use, and know if, you know, this is available. So, yeah, we always can find things that we need to do a little bit better, and I think that is one of them.
Yeah. Do you do any pop-up playground services?
Not so. We do some at those already events, like I said, Family Day.
But not throughout the summer.
Not throughout the summer. No, we try to go there. We've done a couple park pop-up events with some success. But just because either we had some success or we haven't done it, that doesn't mean we don't see the value in it or wouldn't do it. So those are the types of things that we would do.
Our community and this committee came forward and put together some ideas, and we got some support from, you know, local government here, and would down the road would be something we could maybe initiate.
I think so. I think the only thing I would make a comment now that I don't think it would be sort of further down the road. If there's something that comes out of this, like a direction from this commission, it might be challenging for me if you know, we decided yesterday at the commission that I was going to phone you and advocate and tell you to do this. Well, that needs to go through a few more steps. We're talking about brainstorming and getting stuff on the ground and stuff. So, and then something came to me where I thought, I need to share this with Luke or Tom just to sort of make sure we kind of understand it. We can always do that. Our recreation coordinators, they do presentations quite often, like all the time in the community. So if you ever wanted something similar, but you want to hear more specific about youth, then we could do something similar where our youth coordinator could come and do exactly the same, more focused, but we could come and do that easy.
Okay. We can move along.
How much time do you want on it?
Well,
I can go forever, or?
Oh, yeah, no, we probably don't want to go forever.
Okay.
We still have a bit of other business to do at the end.
So I could 10-15
perfect.
I work, and then if I get a signal, carry on. And
okay.
If you start to doze off, I know I'll shorten it up, kind of thing. So, what are you two here? So as Dina mentioned, we do have a parks component very similar to recreation side. We have a team of planners, operators, and coordinators. What you're searching is like, we're actually pretty slim ant factory, if you will, kind of thing. So there's not a lot of boots on the ground, and I'll get to the volume of that the team oversees. So we do have a manager of park services named Rick Deaton. And then superintendents of planning and parks operations, and then the parkland administrator. We do literally handle hundreds of leases and licenses through the years, and I'll get into what they may look like coming in here kind of thing. So, we're all based out of the Parkland Qualcomm area. I'm the only general manager that I've worked at a host of that place, so I'm a local, but where our spectrum is broad, and I'll get into what that looks like. So again, this team oversees everything from our person maintenance. We have two campgrounds, one on Gabriola, one at Horn Lake that we oversee. Various special use permits, which are big in parks, everything from weddings to movie shoots and everything goes on in that area. Land acquisition is a big file that takes some time and energy and tenacity. That we are working on, and we work also very closely with land trust agencies, municipalities, and whatever it takes to get the work done. We're pretty nimble. So what is RDM Parks? And there's really two sides of it. There's the regional park portfolio. These are the one that most people are familiar with. And what that is that is a service that's funded by the whole region. So that means the four municipalities, Parcel, Qualcomm, Lansfield, and Nanaimo, and all the electorators. So it's really a true regional service. And within that, there's nine regional natural areas, 10 regional parks, two rec areas, which are two campgrounds, and one conservation area that's very close to this community here, Little Falcon River Estuary. I'll then focus on the community parks and trails. In the context of community parks, these are the rural areas. So, and the regional district now is quite unique because our rural areas are really quite big and populous as well. So when you're talking about the Noose Bay, I forget the number, we're in 7,000 plus there kind of thing. So Gabriel is over 5,000, Area G's in the 8s and 9s, you know, comparable to Qualcomm Beach and Parksville kind of thing. So we're the entity for those unincorporated areas. And they're all self-funded as well, and I'll get into what it looks like. And even in those areas, we have 38 community trails, 175 community parks, of which 91 are developed, so there's something on that. There'll be a playground, amenity, a skateboard park, bike parks, all that stuff laid in there. And you can see there's four off-leash parks there. So the RDN, a bit of a hard slide for everyone to read, but just to give you the scope, those dots and those blue dots are all parks that we oversee. So the bigger ones are the, and I'm colorblind, so I reference them big and little. So the bigger oblong dots are regional parks, and are they blue for a bit? Purple, blue?
Yeah.
Okay. The other dots are our community parks. That's 175. So that's where we have people out and about, where people are in the community throughout the region. What's interesting about this slide, I pointed out as well, too, is with our great team of staff, I didn't realize this until we did our last management plan, but we're actually the largest land manager in the region. So of all the protected areas, the RDN oversees 27% of the land going in. Second to that is provincial parks at 22.4, municipal parks at 19.2 when you lump it all together. So it's a nice imagery to sort of say we're looking at targets. You know, you might hear 30 by 30, protection 30 by 30. You know, how are we fitting into that? We've got a ways to go, but already you can kind of see there's some big scraps of land that is, that's been managed by the RDN. How did we get there? Well, it was quite a ride, and you can see the growth of and the importance of this portfolio. And I don't see it blowing up based on conversations I'm here at the board table at this point in time. But you can sort of see it started Beachcomber Park, beautiful park in the news. Was one of the first. Fish Creek Falls was the second. Little Falcon River, Horn Lake, and then we started adding Mount Benson. The biggest bump, Mount Erasmus Massif, your backdrop. It is crown land. It is a regional park that we manage. It is our best park. It's actually, people love it. Actually, doesn't take a lot to maintain it. We have more challenges in the top lot than you will have up Mount Erasmus. So it's nice to have.
Yeah. Some of these slides have really great information, but they're hard to
read. Yeah, I walked through. Yeah.
We have access to
energy. For sure, yeah. We have the personal strategy that I'll even maybe pass on to Bernadette to drill into the plan details. That'd be good. So I'll take you for a little tour of regional parks. You've seen the slide already. But we have the Big Falcon River Regional Trail. And the Little Falcon River Estuary Conservation Area. So this is one of our conservation parks that we have, and we partnered with you don't go it alone on any of these things, so we co-own this with Ducks Unlimited, and was purchased by with them. It is our first conservation area that we bought, so it's for anyone but people. Unless you're helping the land or stewarding the land, you won't be out there kind of thing.
I got to go there the other day because I was helping with the stream.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, so if you're if you got gloves in your hands and gum boots on, you probably could be there, right? So, yeah, so that's it. It's a beautiful park. Yeah. So you can walk the stick out there, but you're not to be on the inside of that. Top Ridge Regional Trail is a popular regional trail. You might have read a little bit about it because we have to piece it together a little bit coming in, but it basically connects the Rock River Provincial Park all the way into Ainsburn River Park, and is a popular bridge. Looking at this photo here, you're actually the right-hand side. This is the interesting part of our world. That's RDN Community Parkland. Left-hand side is town of City of Parksville Parkland, and the bridge is RDN kind of thing. So it takes it all to get your work, and it's on Ministry of Transportation land to build a bridge. So,
is there any significance to that?
To the Converse?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Top Ridge was the original crossing of the highway. Where, so Yeah, see, there's some foundations there on the right-hand side. That's the footing of the original bridge there. Yeah. So it was always called Pockridge. A few of us jumped off that in our youth and still made.
The red trail that comes right into Qualcomm Beach, what's that?
That's a partial Qualcomm Links. And it's mostly a roadside trail. It's actually, if you're on the road, when incorporation or expansion of Qualcomm Beach, you actually took on one of our pieces that we built, that connected Chartwell to, I'm sorry, the crossroad that it connected to into the estate center.
Yeah.
So we actually put that in, and then when Qualcomm Beach expanded, there you go, and it's a great feature and thing. So what's unusual about... Not unusual, it's just something we have to work through. The RDN does not control road, it's the Ministry of Transportation, so we have to take out license or permit with the ministry to build anything on it, or even if that took a little time, just put signage on it, to say, hey, can we put signage to get from parts of the Qualcomm Beach? You think it'd be easy? Ms. Pally Luke, you'd say, Public Works, do you mind, right? Here we got to go through Labia Road and everything to make that type of things work, kind of thing, so... Innisfil River Regional Park, a fairly significant park that we worked with the Nature Trust of BC on, a bunch of other land trust partners to make that one come into play. Little Qualcomm River, I'm not sure what I've talked about. There's an image here of the Coons Parcel Rail Trail, and that was built in around 2017. Ultimately, using the Island Corridor ribbon, if you will, to get from A to B is the goal. Obviously, it's a hard ribbon to work on right now, and I know it's on everyone's portfolio to do. So we did a study that identified this stretch of trail to be one of the more easier ones to do as opposed to some other areas. It's still very expensive. You're culverting, you're still building new bridges and so forth. And then you have the conversation about where is that, how is that the corridor going to be used? And so we're kind of a park there for the time being, about that will work its way through. Beachcomber and Moorcroft are two other local regional parks here, Beachcomber being the first, Moorcroft being another one here. Further down island, this is Amelie Falls. If you haven't been there, you probably should try to get there. It's one of the original parks, but people were literally clambering down those banks by rope and ignoring signs and that kind of thing. We did receive some IT money and then retail money to put in a viewing platform that made it more available. And I won't use the word accessible because it's still a challenge to get there, but more accessible than the average backpacking person. So a beautiful feature. And it is one of the backdrops of the Nanaimo. So if you Google Nanaimo, you'll see Ammonite Falls kind of thing. It's one of their images probably next to a bastion and the harbor kind of thing. So then we have Mount Benson. Probably our most popular pressured parks that we have in the system. It is the local grouse brand for going up. We have to build a 127 parking lot there a few years back. It is heavily used. There's some local pressures. Parks in the whole province are under pressure. See the Sky Corridor, you're going to read about them. We were no different. So if you're in the local area, way too many people from outside being in the area, and our phones are blowing off the hook every long weekend or any Sunday day kind of going in. So this is one of the most profile parks in our system. Oberon Gabriela is a Coates Marsh regional park and Piscataway Bay campground. And the Morning Quality Trail, if you ever get a chance, a beautiful historic walk through Cedar as well, that we're looking to bridge the Nanaimo River one day. The Trans-Canada Trail, and then the Hazard Creek Suspension Bridge, which is a backcountry bridge. So we're literally front country and backcountry in this world.
Are you doing anything about like wildfire mitigation measures?
Yeah, we have wildfire prescription plans for all the parks. Now the challenge is how to implement them. So we're actually doing some test pilots on Gabriela right now. The second largest park in the RDN system is actually a community park. I've lost track of this. It used to be 7 or 8 acres since Gabriel the name that they gave it. I think it's 900, almost 1,000 acres in size. It rivals and bigger than Stanley Park. So we're actually doing some test pilot with that community. So you can have very, I'll say from the forestry sector, prescriptions that are very industrial based. and then you move that into urban interface, a park-based, there's some resistance there. So we're actually working through trying to find that happy balance between fire prevention, park values, and perception kind of thing as you go in. So if you want to watch anything, watch 707 in the next month or two or year ahead.
Okay.
So I'll move this briefly on the community parks, but it's just on a scale very similar to the regional parks. They shot up at the same time, and a lot of community parks are actually brought on, like they are in a municipality at time of subdivision. We have purchased some, but most of that growth that you see, there will be subdivision growth is coming in, and some key acquisitions that were taking place in the seven electoral areas. But there is 175 of these things, so I often hear reading the paper, you know, well, we have it here, but you don't have it there. Well, they have it there. They have it there. They have it there kind of thing. So it's quite fascinating. So it's not 1960 anymore. It's 2022, and there's quite a development in these areas. Pickleball court, that's our latest what we're doing. We're just about wrapping up the change room. Again, that's fun. It's due in part with a nice $500,000 grant from the federal government. And then we'll be moving on to looking at establishing the field component of Jack Bay as well, too. It's gone a bit fallow throughout conditions, and it doesn't help in these types of scenarios as well, too, but sort of add that into the mix. Bolte Community Park, that's an electoral area.
Tom, does the RDM put aside a budget for acquisition of new tracts of land?
We do. Yeah, and so it'll be by area. So we as a region, for regional parks, yes, there's an acquisition strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You often don't hear about it because it's a lot of in-camera.
Yeah.
But there's a fund being built up to secure key lands that have been identified. It's maturing in the electoral areas, but there is reserve funds that's been used. So French Creek Estuary, that was recently purchased with the BC Parks Foundation, money came from FLRDC Community Parks Reserves to help leverage the money that BC Parks Foundation then got the millions for. $450,000 came from that.
Your board co-op, too much to have some help on that. Did you purchase that outright?
That one was an outright purchase. We worked very closely with United Church at the time, and the land valuation just for spec was 7.8, we purchased for 4.8. That's one of the first time borrowing took place, so you might hear about that. We actually cashed down about $2 million and the remainder were borrowed over 20 years, which you can do in the regional park system kind of thing. So, but yeah, there was a covenant was placed on the land to help reduce the cost. That's correct.
Yeah. But we do pay on our taxes.
You'll see it in regional parks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so my tax bill, $64 from that.
Yeah.
Good value, you know, for what you get for $64, a bad gig. So, just showing some local park improvements. Bold B was recently resurfaced. That's just on the other side of the Chartwell subdivision in French Creek. So this is a local park in that area there. Lily, right where the sidewalk stops, and you know you're in a rural area, turn right. You'll find this park. Arrington Community Park is another neat park. This is the home of the farmers market. It's actually almost like a regional park because of the farmers market itself. So we've done some really neat upgrades and improvements in that area in this zone. Downstream Community Park, you might have heard about the pickleball court, but there's actually a playground beside it. And this is the playground that was put in at Dunsmuir. And it's really reinvigorated the area. I think Dunsmuir has had better days at times, and it's actually helping the community become not just a railroad bump kind of thing. It's actually got some really neat features in that area. And just in closing, you had asked one of the community members about the parks and trails strategy that I was talking about. I'll send a copy of that to Bernadette. But these are the goals that we're working to on a regional parks, a community parks level, everything from engaging further with our First Nation governments, other governments, protecting, preserving important land areas and acquisition. And the acquisition is really, it's not going away. It's recognized that these lands are not going to be here forever and move forward going on that front. And develop trail connections as well. So this could be from community to community, from park to park as well, too. And I talked about the Ministry of Transportation, how it works and doesn't work. So we've actually got helped some good pilots in place with Wadi, as we call them. I gave Real Light once again to do some roadside trail work that we've done, but it's pretty high in the infrastructure to do so. And I think that's it.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah.
Does anybody have any last? I think we've asked questions as we went along.
Oh, yeah.
Be way to go. But Lindsay, do you have any last questions?
I do not think.
Okay. Great.
How do we support your work?
Locally, in everything, I think where we talk about advocacy is probably the best thing as a community. You know, what is important for this community? Keywords that we use still and it will never scale up. Community of federations, you know, we have to think on a regional scale. Think locally, you have your own municipality to take care of, but you have to know that. Certainly, the Oceanside area is so unique of the different communities that make it up. Is sort of advocating on collaboration. I think that's the best way. We were talking earlier, you know, about our own life experiences, and we didn't know we worked for whoever. We just knew we were working for the community, and we were in Camp Bigfoot. I didn't know what this wreck was. I just knew I had a summer job, and the kids came from all over the place, and that's all that mattered, right? So, I think that's probably the best thing, and just sort of forward thinking, certainly at this table, going in, and
okay. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate you taking the time to.
So fancy. But some of this, we'll get out of here. And then Luke or Bernard will have our contact information. Perfect. If there's anything that you want to follow up on, we can, by all means, do that. So.
It really helps us to understand, I think, as a committee, where some of the responsibilities lay and how.
Sure.
I'd like to hear more about your next program, so whoever's responsible for that.
We'll work something out as far as contact information.
Thank you very much.
All right, have a good meeting. What kind of jogged our memory on this is we should probably do this more often.
Right.
Like every couple of years, or like when there's a new commission or something,
absolutely.
Do it at that time, and then we're kind of on a bit of a cycle almost. Mm-hmm. Time it with some of your other meetings and such when there's a new, because it's a 2-year term, I think. I might be wrong.
Okay. Good meeting you.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
We need to find a different chair that moves like today. I don't know. Maybe it's just a wobbly or something.
Well, that's why I was like leaning back all the time. What's it mean?
Yeah.
What?
Okay.
I thought you were falling asleep.
That's one better.
Okay.
Different. Okay. Well, you could have done that during the
session. It's
all good. Okay, so we'll carry on with the agenda. So the adoption of the minutes. I need someone to move adoption. Did everybody have a chance to review them?
Well, I can make a move.
You can move, make the move. Thank you, Peter. A seconder?
Second.
Okay. Thank you, Diane. All those in favor? Great. I didn't see Lindsay. Oh, there it goes. Okay, perfect. So that is carried unanimously. Business arising from the minutes. So, yes, the last time we were together was the tour. Yeah, so that was really great. Thank you, go to Lynette, for being our tour guide. I think that was valuable too, and she gave us lots of information about parks and where they
are located.
Where they and what staff responsible for and whatnot. So that was helpful. Number B is the official community plan review and talking about the quality of life survey. We also touched on that under new business, so maybe we can
Sure.
We'll get Luke to talk about it at that point.
Okay.
That's okay. Recommendations from council. So there's nothing there currently. Status of recommendations to council. I don't think there was anything. There was one thing I asked about, and that was something about the water fountains and just how do we keep that kind of front and center.
Mm-hmm. So about getting one installed?
Yeah, there was a motion, I think, that explored the addition of water fountains and water filling stations for key locations throughout the town, including but not limited to the waterfront and uptown area. And I think staff had mentioned that this kind of thing happens when there's new projects or, you know, opportunities come along. But I think I would just like to not lose track of that. So maybe we can just keep that under something going forward.
I think that's a good idea. Definitely would get used.
Yeah. Future agenda items and discussion, maybe we can just keep that. Because at Beach Day, I was speaking with the Groundwater Alliance people, and you know, they had some interest in perhaps trying to get funding for those, working with other groups in the community, like maybe Rotary or others, like St. Mark's Church, or, you know, some of these other community groups might be interested in helping us out there.
Sponsoring or supporting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they see the value in having tap water available rather than bottled water throughout the community. So, anyways, I'm just a little excited about it because I think it is it's worth it.
So without having to do actual feasibility study, maybe if we gather information on how it was put in other places already installed and present that, would that help? We had sort of some of that background information.
Yeah, I think maybe in the costing or how, you know.
Could help.
Costing.
Sometimes.
It's a system to remember as we do various projects. Like, as an example, we have a grant application that we've actually already applied for, it, but it's going to council for endorsement tomorrow for a waterfront completion of the wall frame, some of the amenities. And we actually added a water bottle filling station.
Okay.
Good to know. Application, just, you know.
Yep.
As a, it's obviously needed, and you know, maybe brought it up a few times. So.
Well, I think, you know, water fountains were everywhere at one time, and then they kind of were passe. Everyone went to bottled water, and now I think we're getting back to
old and new again.
Yeah,
there's always that cycle of water life.
Yeah. So, okay, well, that's good to hear. Okay, so we'll move on to new business, and we're on to 6B, the project update from staff, and starting with the skate park.
Okay, so I'll run through a number of items here. There may be other projects that you're keen on hearing updates and ask me about those later, but the first one to start with is the skate park feasibility study, which Lindsay, of course, would know a lot about. That project has already started. The consultant, which is New Line Skate Park, held their first consultation meeting recently. It was very well attended. And surprisingly, I knew very few people in the room. So these people come from all over the place. One of them, and then I said, "Oh, why did you see all these people? Who are you? What are you talking about?" And she said, "I live in Eagle Crest." So, you know, that was actually quite surprising to me. So it was a great meeting. They're now doing some preliminary kind of assessments as to what could be done, you know, to the park. They did a survey, which was online. People also filled it out there in the meeting. And so based on that, they'll start to put together some concepts, which we will then do further consultation early in the fall, probably September-ish. So that's moving forward. Any questions about that one before I move on?
Okay, maybe? No hands? No. Oh.
No questions.
Luke, have you got any grants lined up down the road? Like, is there anything on the horizon to be aware of?
No, but this project sets us up for the grants that we would need.
Okay.
So in other words, if something comes up and we have nothing but good intentions, we're not going to give us any money. If we have
a plan,
special study saying, this is what we want to do, it's going to be this much money, then we'll be in a position to actually do a project. So,
okay.
So this is the first step.
Sounds like the RDN access like smaller community grants, but hopefully there'll be other ones that similar type grant funding.
There's definitely money out there. It depends on the interest of the day, and I know a lot of interest is going into housing, but I think recreation won't drop off completely.
So if we have some ideas for grants, who should we forward those to?
Yeah, we'll probably meet our grant partner.
Okay.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time looking at grants.
Just because of my past life, and I'm on lots of different distribution lists, and I get information on.
Yeah.
And I also look for other things as well. So, yeah, if I see something, I'd be happy to pass on.
Good.
And when does the council decide on in terms of funding of that $1.2 million bill? Should the town get a support to half 50%, or how does that work?
So, yeah, it is funded in the financial plan, so that you see the expense identified, but the funding sources are not completed in the plan. So I think that the sources are there for about half of it.
About half.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it depends on the grants, but that's always been the understanding that it will be a collaborative effort with the town putting in money, user groups, grants, you know, whatever that might be. So
going forward, Ed, is that going to be a kind of a guideline for other projects that are going to be popping up?
I think we have done that in the past. I think we sort of have a track record of doing it that way, that at least to show the commitment and the interest from the users that, you know, this is something that they really want to get behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the latest fad or whatnot.
Yeah.
I think it's important, and to our taxpayers as well. That,
have an argument with that.
Yes.
So $600,000 is quite a bit.
Well, grants with that partner.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
With a bigger price tag, I think you qualify for some additional money.
Yeah.
But you'd be surprised how many grants would be available for a project like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we do that with infrastructure, too. It's kind of a side point. But if we think a project's going to cost $2 million, we might only fund, you know, $1 million because we're planning to keep applying for grants until we get the other $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a similar approach.
Is there a mechanism or an entity where someone could will their estate to, like, is there a foundation, South Balkan Foundation, for example?
We have a policy for tax receipts. So we are a charitable organization. We're not a charitable organization, but we can issue tax receipts in the same way.
Yeah, I think that came up a number of years ago. So, the finance department set aside.
There's not necessarily a community development foundation where that I'm aware of it.
In the town itself.
What about the Parks and Qualcomm Foundation?
Yeah,
that might be
interesting.
A way to fund stuff.
Yeah.
Because they identify specific end users and they kind of would manage those funds and people, groups, and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, groups would apply for that funding. So the Parks and Qualcomm Foundation.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And the Rotary is always...
And Rotary as well.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have big numbers, but still, they're very good with community projects.
Yes, I know. I'm a Rotary.
Oh,
I see Lindsay. I've got Lindsay all over the place.
You are. I see your name popping up
there. That's a good thing.
Yes, it is. Lindsay.
Yes. Just a question about fundraising. So the skateboard group is not an official society or a registered charity, and that's a bit of a process in itself. So I'm just wondering, I've seen in the past with other skate park developments that some advocacy groups are able to collect donations or fundraising and have that directed directly to the town. Is that a potential option in the future so that the skateboard group wouldn't have to necessarily become an official society? Are there any thoughts or has there been any exploration on that idea?
Yeah, I do think that's possibly an option. Depending on the way the fundraising is done,
mm-hmm.
you know, if we're getting $20 donations over the course of 5 years, I think that would take a lot of time, and so council would need to endorse that. But certainly, like larger donations, and just generally speaking, I think that's a good role for the town.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we could definitely talk about that and see like becoming a patient for you is going to be a lot of work.
Yeah, I figured that we're not quite there yet, but I know that sometimes formalizing as a society can help with grants as well. So I guess, you know, when we're at that point, we've done enough work now as a unofficial group that it would be fairly easy to become a society and then kind of go from there.
I would strongly recommend that you become a society.
Yeah.
Just for the purpose of getting credibility. And I think when we apply for grants, if we have a society partner, it looks better. So. And same with pickleball, Peter.
Oh, you got it already. Okay.
It's hard to do that.
If you want to become a charitable society, it's more hoops.
There's also an organization called Pews, if I'm not mistaken, and they sometimes will partner with groups. So maybe approach them.
They're not a charitable society, but
they have helped other groups, though.
Yes, they have.
So,
yeah. There could be other partnerships, too. So, Lindsay, we can follow up after. I'll go ahead and move on to the next one, which is the quality of life survey process. So, as I think many members are aware, that's probably a precursor to the OCP review as well. So quality of life survey kind of tracks resident satisfaction on all sorts of things that the town does, also gauges interests and preferences on the topics of life. Could be housing, could be climate change, could be recreational services, investments, parks, trails, whatever that might be. So we're now in the early phases of that. We just issued a call for volunteers to join the Fisher Community Plan Review Steering Committee, which would start up, you know, as soon as we form a committee, and then that would last for the duration of the OCP review. They would advise on the quality of life survey, and then as the actual process for consultation and OCP review starts, they would advise throughout that whole process. I think it's a pretty rewarding process, and we'll get good interest, I think. So quality of life survey starting now. We have proposals from consultants to do the technical aspect of survey deployment and processing, because we want to make sure that it's statistically valid and the questions are phrased professionally and not leading, and that's very important to take extra care in there. So we have proposals. We're probably going to be making a recommendation for council, not tomorrow, because we just wrap that up, but it will be the early September 1 and stage that consultant. And the survey will go out in January. That's the current schedule.
I know previously there had been some question or discussion around whether the committee would have any opportunity, I think, to have input on the quality of life survey questions. If there were specific areas or questions the committee wanted addressed, would it be appropriate for us to put a recommendation forward?
So
we're not prepared probably to do that today, but maybe at our next meeting, people can come to hear.
Homework could bring it.
That's a good suggestion. You know, because the topical issues are exactly what we really want to explore through the quality of life survey. So if there are things you're like, I'd like to know what our residents think about X, this is the perfect, you know, gets mailed to every household in the town. We have thousands of responses. So
I think it'd be important to know from the family perspective and also some of our youth, and maybe if you're over a certain age, you can have, there could be a short component or session where youth could actually answer the question to either parents or whatever, because I think having it, you know, a youth study is really important, because one of our things we want to do is have, you know, family retention and opportunities for future residents. So we don't know what they're thinking, so we have to ask them, right, Lindsay?
Sorry, it keeps taking me a second to get off mute. Yes.
Okay, next one is the Stotland Park request for proposals. So that's the waterfront park, former St. Andrew's Lodge Park, and we had a conceptual plan done a few years ago. Now we're advancing with a finalized plan based on that conceptual plan. So at the council meeting tomorrow, we have a recommendation to proceed with a consultant. Recommendation is to proceed with the consultant that did the conceptual plan. I think we're in, well, I'll talk about it tomorrow, but we'll get really good value if we allow them to build on their previous work. The other consultants, I think, were more interested in recreating some aspects of the previous plan as opposed to just advancing forward. So anyway, that's an exciting project. We'll see that moving forward towards adoption, I think, in November is the adoption.
And long term, that's going to be a community space as well, where there's lots of different opportunities for programming.
Well, we're not programming inside the building. It's only the outside.
Because it's historical.
That's right. There's a society that has that space. And they're looking after the building and everything from the outside maintenance of the building to the interior programming. So that's going to evolve over time as the society works through those details. But the actual park space on the outside and the interface with the waterfront and the parking and the playground or whatever goes in there. All that type of stuff.
That's town. The town has
to ask a question when council's going to consider that. What kind of guidelines do you give them? I mean, there's no question about your use there on concepts.
There is. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not depending on the budget.
I wasn't thinking about the contract budget. I'm thinking about the overall budget for what they're discussing about the plan.
Yeah. So there is money in the financial plan. And that was based on the conceptual option. I think it's around $350,000 budgeted over the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that sounds like a lot until you start to build options. So,
no, it doesn't sound like a lot.
So this fall, we're going to be talking about that again because we may need to add the options on top of that because $350,000, you know, buys a playground and, you know, trails and some improvements, but it doesn't go as far as you would think.
Sure.
Okay, so that's that project.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting.
Well, and I guess it will depend too at what comes back in that final plan, right? And then figuring out how to fund that appropriately. Yeah.
Plus Garage property, so that's the property at the corner of Fern and Memorial, which it with the exception of an acre where Nick and Nationals will be building next door. There's lots of room there where the town needs to be planned for the future in terms of parking, public space, perhaps artwork, you know, all sorts of things that we could be heading towards in the future on that site. So we have a recommendation to award that design contract to a consultant also going to Temple tomorrow. So two big projects that are kind of wrapping up tomorrow that the consultant will get their legs under them this summer and then, you know, start the project in earnest early in the fall.
Okay.
And there will be opportunities for public to have input.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And those are big, right? That's a pretty landmark location. And that happens before the OCP gets cracking up. Okay. That was more of just a comment to you. In terms of the direction, and then there might be, you might take us in a different direction, right? So is there any concern about that?
Well, this, the bus garage project has been heading, I think, in this direction for a number of OTCs, right? So this is actually, I see that project as sort of the fruit of previous iterations, you know. So I think that site was first identified by the town and 2006 OCP, and then we refined the potential uses for that in 2011, and then again 2018. So, and then we really started the process to find someone at the table, you know, to sell a portion of the site and all that. So, yeah, we're probably not going to be focusing the OCP review on that particular site again.
Have you seen a vision pretty consistent through those years for that area?
Yeah, okay. Pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, when the town bought it from the school district, it was very clearly supposed to be like a catalyst for, community development. Like, it's supposed to be a community hub there, you know, with housing and some commercial services. And then the public square, there's always been a big star on the OCP map on the give notes that it's just like a public square. And so that's been for 20 years.
check me if I'm wrong on this. The last OCP, 2018, there's 11 suggestions on the OCP, and none of them were grocery store.
Well, grocery store is not land use. It's a...
Okay.
That was it.
It's but the usage of the whole, you know, bus garage property.
Yeah, so, but it's commercial. That's commercial. Not residential above.
Yeah. But people didn't have that.
Hey, no, that's
stuff. Yeah. Let me give up on
that. Yeah, that's a side canyon.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see grocery stores at all. Right, so when we talk about that, it's just, well, that would get right.
I'm going to check.
Why don't we take that one inside and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, accessibility survey. So the town has formed an accessibility committee. That's a provincial mandate, so we were required to form a committee. But I think it'll be very valuable to the town in the long term, both looking at the accessibility of buildings, also parks, programs, and potential barriers that people have to accessing town services. So that is kind of a side project that started up recently, and they're now digging into an accessibility plan.
It's actually a team thing.
Correct. Yes.
So it's a little bit less formal than our traditional committee structure. Yeah.
Okay, UN platform and separated walkway. As you know, that's under construction. The pile are pretty much in place now. So next step is to lift these prefabricated panels, concrete panels, and build the walkway, so they'll kind of arc around over Beach Creek, which will be fabulous. We did have to eliminate some of the bells and whistles from the scope of the project to make it affordable. And so we have another grant application that we submitted that we're going to be asking for council endorsement tomorrow that'll fund some of the elements like the benches and educational signage and the stuff that is very important to the success of the place. But we just had to drop out of this first contract to get it through.
So the interpretive signs will both get reinstalled after the completion, or are you still looking for funds for that? Or
we're hoping that we can get money through this grant program.
Okay.
To include this. So there's landscaping that it both in the kind of estuary area and in the upland that will be completed with this grant funding. Seating, educational signage, a bike repair station, which is important for our active transportation grant. A water bottle filling
station. Yeah, water bottle filling station.
So it's about $500,000 grant that we're hoping to get. Really push it over the top and turn
success. And has that already been submitted? Or?
Submitted, yeah.
Oh, okay. And when are you supposed to hear back about that?
In August.
Okay. Well, sure. Well, landscaping.
There's a little. Let's see. I guess I do that as a scene. You can see that. So there's the walkway.
Yeah.
On one side of the walkway is like the estuary side, but then there's a portion on the
beach.
On the highway side.
Yeah,
so there's a number of little landscape areas.
So not quite enough, though.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
With the, so the question was, my linkage to a Space Smith viewing platform, and I'm going to make a leap and assume that it will be similar. The sign is, there'll be some sort of...
Yeah, we're using that as a model.
Really cool.
That's a great model.
Sweet. And we use even their budget to kind of give us
how
much it would cost.
And I was reflecting on the landscaping at Space Smith. Does it look like it's supposed to be right now? Yeah, I think so.
It's pretty overgrown. I was just there the other day, actually.
So is that,
that's it. Take care of that. Is that the town? Is that Streamkeepers?
Because there was a phase two of that project where we had a washroom in place and up increases to the parking area. Okay.
Yeah.
So
I think it's on the radar.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I, yeah.
Looking pretty wild.
And you're right, I'm like, hold on. I'm like, I don't remember that look in the drawing.
No.
Oh, yeah. There's space two.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. I think you got it. You don't want to see that one.
You're not.
Okay, it's part.
Cool. So we haven't lost.
Process is part of the project.
Because that's going to be when that is all mature from where St. Andrews or I was behind the times on the name, something all the way down is going to be great network of pockets of parks, right?
Oh, and it could be tied in with a lot of different literature that goes out to the general public and also visitors to the town, linking it with the Mount Arrowsmith biosphere and the amazing places, you know, the fact that we are enough with every region, and so many people don't know about that.
Yeah.
So you'll be pleased to know that I'm actually doing a Culture Days event on September 24th around Beach Creek, and I talked to the mayor and Jean Young about it yesterday, and yeah, so there'll be a temporary public art installation that I'm coordinating with 50 hand-painted wooden fish that are reflective of the Yellow Fish campaign, so I'm getting the Yellow Fish from the Faye group, I forget their acronym.
They don't have any.
Oh, I know, I'm working on it. I already.
I'll tell you who's stopping.
Nibby? Nibby, thank you.
Nibby, yeah.
Yeah.
Nibby.
I've been working with
Mark. Those.
Oh, did you? Okay. Sorry, I'm taking away from the meeting.
Yeah, I've given about 20 to, who did I give them to? But it is Nibby's, yeah.
Yeah,
Mark Riordan.
Barb gave them to me, I actually was able to enlist the Mid-Island Woodworkers Guild to make the remaining ones, and I'm working with some of the young artists who did mindfulness in May and some other parties, and it will be, so that's being worked on right now, and it will be launched for BC and World Rivers Day on September 24th.
Okay.
And temporary display that day right by the chamber office on the grassy area, and then they will stop and then migrate into the lobby area for the duration of Culture Days until October 15th.
Yeah.
Excellent. So,
well, thank you for
I'm not
sharing that information with us. So we'll watch out for that.
Thank you. Sorry for taking a look that part of
it. Go ahead. I can wave my
okay.
Face.
Okay. So we have round table. We're at 3:54, so hopefully we can keep this relatively short.
So,
is there any items that people want to bring up?
I have
okay.
I have a fantasy item, but I won't get it. And question to you about pickleball process. This is the about the town's agreement to pay for half the pickleball facility. I think Kevin Spencer was supposed to get in touch with me about 2 weeks ago for a callback about what I'm supposed to do here with the process. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know anything about it, but
I haven't got any recognition of the town's decision to for half of all facilities.
If I remember correctly, Peter, I think the motion was that staff be directed to include that budget item in the next iteration of the financial plan. So yeah, the only record you would have would be that motion, which is in the minutes.
Yeah, I know.
It's
on. The town hall would have a process that there's the person who made the request would get an acknowledgement of that particular decision. No?
Right. Well, I think that's being worked on, our whole communication processes. Yeah, about correspondence or follow-up and all of that.
Because right now we don't know where it's going to go. We've made a decision. You know, there's two locations, and we made a decision on one of those, West Bread, where they settled.
Right. So you have notified the town of that?
Well, we were asked to notify. Well, I've told Susan that that's not good enough. The old tennis court site.
Yeah.
Okay. Which part was it?
At the field.
The middle field.
Yeah.
Above the bathrooms.
Yeah.
Right next to the west side of the field.
Yeah.
Away from that. Or both.
Like three.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. I think you and I can go out there. So yeah, I'll give some back to
you as well.
Like, I know that there's going to be
I appreciate your revenue. Okay.
They've already read to me.
Those down here.
Can we follow up? I'm going to talk to you about it in a second. But I think that there's a linkage between the parts project and the call press, which I will.
Okay.
That was in the GFA.
Yep, that's
right.
Anytime.
Okay.
Okay.
I have more.
Okay.
The water group, this is an artist. The water garden on West Crescent at Memorial.
Yep, the rain garden.
Yes. Now, I know they only have two outside workers right now, and I was talking to the community this morning, and they're asking council for five more positions. Right, that's not my issue, but anyway. The site lines down there, coming, going east, southeast from, across Memorial, site line is very
limited,
compromised, looking upwards. Now, I phoned Oliver Watson about that 10 days ago, and 2 days ago it wasn't addressed.
I thought I saw that some of the plants.
They came in there and did some of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's more thistles in there than anything else.
I know the thistles. Okay.
So anyhow.
I think the staff are aware of it. It's just a getting to it.
But when it comes to site lines, I think that should be dealt with.
It's a safety. Yes.
10 minutes, you know.
Yeah. What? Pretty much.
Okay, also on the park side, the state of the gardens on the Facemith Interpretive Center.
Again, we touched on that.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Is there going to be something done about that? Because obviously you're short of manpower when it comes to dealing with parks.
Yeah, so that is, staff are aware of that.
Yeah.
And
I made a suggestion. It was a mistake on our part or the town's part to put it in a very complicated garden there. It should have been shrubs, less maintenance. So maybe at some stage, we want to make that decision. I mean, having been a streetkeeper, it was my initial input into that thing to get it done. But maybe that was a mistake on our part. So maybe this is town's property. They should make that decision via platform.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can have a look at it and reevaluate.
Probably should.
Yes.
Too bad, because Flynn Brooks put a lot of time in it.
Can we make an initiative like as an adopt-a-park? Like maybe there might be a group like Rotary or somebody else that would be interested in helping.
Well, I don't think streetkeepers wants to do it anymore. I didn't say
the streetkeepers. I said another group.
Okay,
yeah, we have done that in the past. Like the Eagle Crest Garden Club used to do the entranceway to Eagle Crest, but then now that's kind of gone by the wayside. But we have had examples in the past where that has been done.
And there are some of those open recreation programs like that attached to a couple of the high schools. Like there could be a collaboration perhaps if there was some education around, plant maintenance and stuff. I mean, don't give up on it altogether. You know, maybe put out a call to some volunteer groups, not the stream keepers, because I know they're very busy doing many other things.
We have to give up on it. I think we just have to
identify
what's in there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we need to, I would argue, let's make it a priority. We're in tourism season. That was our brand viewing platform. That's a premier destination.
Absolutely. Like, not just in the summer, but certainly during the festival as well. So that should be addressed. I mean, that does fall under recreation, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think it also, climate, friendly, or, we have to be.
We are in a climate crisis, so, some of those plants and trees and whatever is there might be different now because of the changes that have happened.
Yeah,
like when was that inducted? Because I'm new to the community, so I don't know. Like, how long ago was all that planned?
About 2018.
Yeah.
Well, it started in 2017. It was commemorated on September 18th.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, it's been a few years, 5 years now, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And we put a tax on most people to stay overnight in the park. And in lieu of the tax, they can weed the garden.
Just put them to work.
Last thought here.
Okay.
Now, I made a, well, Liz, you remember this. Remember I had a poster session about 5 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that's particular time. I was quite keen on the, this is a waterfront issue,
mm-hmm.
about putting the flooring down there. Now, if we can do it for the spit, surely we can do it for farther down there, because a groin has, now, for you folks who don't know, a groin is an extension of the beach, a head that moves out into the water. So we create a bigger park down there, have a place for parking bicycles. You get the benches off the promenade there, because those are a problem. Like on Sunday, that was a major problem at 1 o'clock. Walking down that promenade wasn't easy.
Yeah, because of the people sitting there. Yeah. Well, it was just a busy day, but that was
the benches would come off, and the cutaways would come off because you have another access going down to the point. I don't have a picture of it right now, but I did this with Carl's suggestion about that time. Here's a big key on it, but he backed off later on. But anyhow, I think that that should be in the view of the town council, that sometimes you embellish the waterfront down there because it also prevents erosion. It also retains sand because on the look at the wind rows, the major storms come from the northeast. As you land on the south. And on the east side, on the far on the north side, would be the deposition of sand. So I think it would help in every way to be all that makes sense.
The waterfront master plan certainly looks at redoing the walkway and all of that. It's just quite expensive, as you would imagine, right? So we just, we're doing, and I know there's been work with private owners along Judges Row, and we're doing a sort of a trial one down at Higson and whatnot. So it's definitely on the radar.
Yeah,
and we have a grant application in right now to do like little, like I can call them mini growings around to the stormwater outlet, like 5 or 6 of them. Because the cost of doing a comprehensive treatment along the whole waterfront is so mind-bogglingly high that we're trying to find ways to kind of have strategic interventions then allow nature to do heavy lifting for us. Right? So we have a grant application in now to do that. And if, you know, if it were funded, it was, I think that's 100% funding, right? So it's,
so that would be the actual work, not just the consulting?
Actual work.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're working on it.
Yeah, I know, but we're still going to have to do that wall down there.
Yes.
Oh, well, it will be at some point, for sure.
Yeah. I know. Fantasy.
Okay.
Yeah.
405. Are we done? Would somebody like to move adjournment? Oh, there's number 7 was future agenda items and discussion. Did anybody have something?
Yeah.
We're going to do our homework, remember?
Yeah.
So, so that's something we can include there, Bernadette.
Questions for the survey, correct?
Thinking about quality of life survey. Mm-hmm.
Now, is there an example of it from past that we can sort of use for reference?
Yeah, so you can find out the quality of life survey itself and all the results and everything on the town website.
Okay.
There's a really good presentation from the consultant at the time, you know, going through all the results, question by question, and who answered what.
Yeah. Bernadette, you're going to be
the mechanism is going to be a household postal survey currently.
You're
that's
the second so can we have the link be included in that?
And so then the potential sample bias is really used, right?
Thank you. But there is an opportunity we did last time, anyways, to answer online as well.
It'll definitely be online. People can mail postcards, and then they go online and fill it out.
But if I'm a 15-year-old,
correct?
How? The postal survey, you know, that will mess out that voice potentially.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's it.
What about a QR code just for the questions for the youth? Would that be possible?
could be done. You
know, I think as part of the overall strategy, it'd be useful for us to have a little.
Yeah. Well, that can be our homework.
Hey, this is our homework.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll do
Let's
that.
Bring that up for our homework.
Perfect.
I like the idea.
So the last debate, that was.
So that would be a guideline.
Yeah. Well, they, well, we have to.
Trust me, I'm not meeting as best I can.
Okay, we'll get a meeting to, I mean, a motion to adjourn.
I think a motion.
I don't think we need a seconder, do we?
No.
Okay, so we are adjourned at 4:07.